I'm your host, David Nage. This is BaseLayer, where institutional investors come to learn about crypto.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the BaseLayer podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of ARKA, where David Nage is a principal. ARKA is not responsible and does not verify the accuracy of any of the information contained in the podcast series available for listening. The primary purpose of this podcast series is to educate and inform. The podcast series does not constitute financial advice or other professional advice or services. Please do your own research.
Today's show is sponsored by Coinbase Prime, a leading prime brokerage for digital assets. While Coinbase is widely known for its retail business, Coinbase also provides the bridge to the digital asset world for institutional investors, high net worth individuals, financial institutions, and corporate investors. Through their professional trading platform, deep and diversified liquidity, execution expertise, and Coinbase custody, one of the largest, most trusted digital asset custodians, Coinbase Prime is a solution for institutions looking to enter the digital asset markets. For more information, visit prime.coinbase.com. This is David, and this is your new episode of BaseLayer. I have Richard, the founder at Numerai. Richard, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well, actually, in the East Coast of the United States. It's 25 degrees, and I see snow, so I'm getting very festive, and the seasons are coming. I know you are in a part of the world where you were actually just surfing, and it's warm, so I'm very jealous of you right now.
Yep, I'm in Cape Town. In fact, you might even be able to hear the ambient noise in the background is the ocean itself, the Atlantic Ocean. Been doing some surfing here. And I originally grew up in Cape Town, so it's always nice to come back and see family.
And so Richard will have the shortest time on BaseLayer because I'm going to hang up now on this one because I'm incredibly jealous as I look at the snow and the ice that's coming down right now. No, but it's all good. So Numerai was founded in 2015, building a distributed and decentralized, effectively a blockchain-based hedge fund that utilizes artificial intelligence and crowdsourced stock market predictions. There's a lot in here, and we've actually covered Numerai before about a year ago, but having the founder on the show, we'll be able to delve into more of the kind of the catalysts, what actually drove you to create this. And so what we'd like to do on the show is, before we get too far into the project, into the mechanics of that, we'd like to find out what you did before and kind of what inspired you to get into this world and actually be a founder of Numerai.
Yeah. So I've always been interested in the stock market. My dad gave me stocks when I was 8 years old. And then I traded options when I was about 15 years old. And then I studied mathematics. I came to the US to study mathematics. I majored in pure mathematics with a focus on abstract algebra. And then around this time, it was 2012 when I graduated, machine learning was also, there were a lot of breakthroughs in machine learning. So I also took some machine learning classes and then went back to Cape Town to work as a quant. And the first job I got was pretty great because I had a lot of kind of autonomy, and the goal was build a global equity fund. And I said I wanted to do it with machine learning, and they said, okay, try. And for the first few months, it was very difficult. And then we got something that worked quite well and beat a lot of our peers and our benchmarks. And around the same time, I was also investing in Ethereum ICO and following Bitcoin, and some of my friends had crypto companies. So I was always thinking at the same time of learning machine learning and practicing machine learning, I was thinking about crypto as well. And then Numerai was kind of the combination of both, where it was a website where anyone could download all the data, build any model they want, and then send predictions to our fund that are staked with our cryptocurrency.
Right. And so let's delve further down the rabbit hole, if you will. So the platform, so Numerai relies on a monthly, as you mentioned, ML, machine learning, and data science tournament where users, which are predominantly, and correct me if I'm wrong, data scientists, can effectively submit trading algos about the stock market. Is that a fair assessment?
they're not actually submitting algorithms. Okay. So they're not submitting any code. And that's a unique thing. All of the code that they've written to build their models is just on their computers. Like, mm-hmm. we have no idea what's driving their models. But what they do send us are the predictions that come out of that code. So we see their signal, what stocks they like the best, what stocks they don't like. And then we can trade that in our fund. So our users have full control over, you know, what code they use to write their algorithms.
Got it. And so there was a master plan that you published a few years ago. And phase one of that plan was to monopolize intelligence. What does that mean?
Yeah, the master plan. Phase one of monopolize intelligence means gather the best data science community possible to join and start sending us predictions. So, you know, there's already a big data science website called Kaggle, and I even competed in a lot of Kaggle competitions. And you can do all kinds of data science problems there. And they kind of network the data science community in some ways. A lot of people started data science there. And the goal with Numerai was, well, how do we make something new where the problem is much harder because it's a stock market data science problem, mm-hmm. and stock market's pretty efficient, and then get some of those best users. And what happened is, I think it was in the first 2 or 3 months, we got the winner of number of the important Kaggle competitions. We had the winner even of the Netflix prize, another huge data science competition. Mm-hmm. And a lot of top Kaggle users ended up joining, and top data scientists from all sorts of different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So phase one of the master plan, monopolize intelligence, just means let's start by getting a great community of smart people who can model this data.
And this is not irregular. This is not something that is out of bounds. Correct me if I'm wrong. Obviously, you know, myself coming from traditional finance and the family offices and the institutional investors who listen to this show, but there are firms out there like Two Sigma comes to mind. Obviously, Citadel comes to mind. You know, they are kind of trying. They've been trying to do this kind of monopolization, if you will, for a while too. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's a huge war on talent for AI at the moment. And actually, I would say Wall Street isn't really winning that war. I don't think the people who are at Two Sigma, who are experts in AI, are as good as the people at Google who are experts in AI. But they're definitely all paid a lot. And there's a big war for this kind of talent, people who can model this kind of data.
Interesting. Why would you say that? Why would you say that is a very interesting theory and concept. Why would you think that is? Do you have any idea or any kind of inclination why that may be?
I think a lot of the data science, I think the first even machine learning classes for undergrads, as far as I can remember, only started in something like 2010 or 2009 or something like that. Mm. So machine learning is kind of new from that perspective. It's been around for a while. There are many things you would say, certainly machine learning, even in the 80s and stuff, but people started getting excited about it more recently. Now, if you were in college during 2008, the financial crisis, mm-hmm. kind of the last thing you wanted to do was join a Wall Street firm. And they weren't even maybe hiring at that time. But you did want to join Google or Facebook or something like that. So I think that for a time, because everyone sort of hates Wall Street, they lost a lot of talent. And they're people who are not interested enough to go and work in that kind of environment. And they don't have as good cultures or as good good work environments, the Wall Street companies, I think. Hmm. And then there's also a lot of secrecy. So everything right. in Wall Street is like, if you build something and you walk out the door accidentally with some code on a flash drive, you like go to jail. Right. And you imagine they're not as aggressive about things like that at a tech company.
Right. So we talked about phase one of monopolizing intelligence. And as we just discussed, there's a war. And so we now know that there is a war. And I agree with you that those, you know, years ago, and talking about over a decade ago, the master plan, if you will, to borrow your own terminology, was you go to Harvard Business School and then you go to Goldman or you go to Credit Suisse. You do your 2 years, and then you go to KKR, or you go to BlackRock, and then you progress forward. And then all of a sudden, what we started seeing is that the evolution of family offices, and again, a lot of the people who listen to the show are obviously from that world, where you started saying, okay, you go to college, you go to business school, and then you go to a family office, because you had, as to your point, much more flexibility. You had a wider mandate, and you were able to do things that in more of the quote-unquote kind of cookie-cutter kind of paradigms, you weren't really able to do. And so I agree with you. I think there has been a shift over the last 5-10 years where what you are saying is correct. So I want to talk about the next iteration of this kind of master plan, as you alluded to. And about a month or so ago, you announced Numerize Signals. So talk to us about what that is.
Yeah, so you've touched on a lot of important points there. I mean, finance has changed. The sense that, you know, everything in quantitative finance is about a trade list. How do you make a trade list that's good? And if you follow the trade list, you make money. And it turns out that quantitative finance is all about making such a trade list, like deciding what stocks to trade, without actually knowing much about what the companies do, or being that Harvard Business School guy. So it became a much more mathematical field over the last 30 years. And I would say there's a next step in that, which is going from a mathematical field where there's some quantitative flavor to finance, which is the world today, into a world where it's totally automated and totally run by machine learning algorithms. So Numerize Signals is a way for anyone who has any data set and has built any model on that data set to submit that to our fund so that we can add it into our meta model and trade it. A lot of efficiencies to doing things that way. Not everybody should start a hedge fund. Not everybody should work in finance. But everybody who has some model or has some data science skill should be able to put that somewhere. So, you know, we have a guy who's a finance professor in Florida, and he's a big user on Numerai. And his skills would never reach the markets because he's currently a professor. Mm-hmm. But now on the weekends, he can make Numerai models. And by the way, some of those models are way better than anything you have on Wall Street. Mm-hmm. And so that's the idea we're going for here. Like, we do not really want someone to quit their job at Google to join Numerai. We want them to stay at Google and then on the side do Numerai. And if you look at things like that, we actually have more data scientists working on Numerai than any other hedge fund in history.
That's impressive. And so I think if someone's listening to this, they obviously understand the concepts and the paradigm here of obviously, you know, a fund and using data and AI. This is not, as I said at the very onset, this is not new, but the way you're doing it is new when you're using a distributed network effectively of, dare I say, experts, because they are. And so using your, you know, example of the professor down in Florida, I think people might want to know what incentivizes him to do that on the side.
Well, cryptocurrency. Numerai created a cryptocurrency called NMR. And we decided not to do an ICO. We just gave the cryptocurrency away to our users. And so one night, this professor of finance in Florida woke up and he had like a few thousand of these NMRs. And now what he could do was stake them. So he could go onto Numerai, create a great prediction set, and say, I really believe these predictions are going to work. And I believe it so much that I'm prepared to stake on it. So he takes some of the cryptocurrency, stakes it. And then if his predictions do well, he makes a lot of money. If his predictions do badly, we burn some of his stake. And that incentive it turns out to be very powerful, because everybody cares about something if they have skin in the game. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly he's got a reason to maybe spend a little bit more time working on his models and improving them. And if you do that with lots of people, hundreds of models, which is what we have, you start to get very, very good, very, very good performing models.
Right. And so, again, getting further into this and the nuances here. So, again, using the professor as the example. So, Professor spends a weekend working on models. He posts it to Numerai. He stakes his NMR, and it doesn't work out very well. There are anomalies in the market, and his model does not meet them, and it performs poorly, and his stake is effectively burned, as you alluded to. Is there a dispute mechanism? You know, this is getting further into how distributed and decentralized organizations, you know, I'm not saying Numerai is a DAO, but we are seeing a push towards that, you know, with dispute resolution with things like Aragon Court. Are there mechanisms where if X professor does such work, believes and tests it, and then there are anomalies in the market that they cause them to fail? Is there a dispute resolution mechanism currently in Numerai?
Yeah, so thinking about it in a kind of DAO way or crypto way, like we're kind of the oracle, right? We decide whether the predictions were good and just decide who to pay based on that. And the reason for that is all the data we give out on Numerai is obfuscated. So when you look at our data, it doesn't look like stock data. It's just a whole bunch of numbers between zero and one. And only a machine learning expert can really make sense of the data. So that's what we give out. And therefore, when people do submit predictions, they actually have no idea what they're predicting on. So they do have to kind of trust us to score them correctly. But because we have no incentive not to, because again, when you lose NMR, when we burn NMR, it's not like we're getting the NMR from you, you know, it just gets burned. So we have perfect incentives to continue to pay the best people the most and have paid millions of dollars to our data scientists since we started.
And so in terms of getting the talent, if you will, how has that been as you've been growing? Is it more viral where, you know, Professor X down in Florida says, wow, this is fantastic. I'm making some money on the side in addition to my day-to-day activities. And he reaches out to Y professor, B professor, D professor. Is it viral in that sense? Or is there more work that you have to do to kind of go and find those people? What is it? Is it kind of push or pull?
Yeah, we haven't done much in the way of advertising or anything like that. Because like I said, the data scientists do all know each other. In the case of the finance professor, in fact, he's even like taught Numerai in his classes a little bit and told some of his students about it. And then they've figured out how to use it and maybe staked some Numerair. But people also find out about it through crypto. They see Numerair on Coinbase and then they, you know, want to know what that is. And they figure out it's like, a really good place if you're a data scientist to build models. So it's all kinds of organic ways and definitely isn't growing like a conventional internet company where, it's much more organic and there's not as much, it's also niche, right? It's not for everybody. Like right. we do not ever need to get to a million users to get to $1 billion staked or in assets under management. That can happen even just with the users we have now.
Right. Another part of Numerai is Erasure Bay. Can you let people know what that is?
Yeah, so we created all these smart contracts for staking. And we had staking on Numerai since mid-2017. So it's been a while now. And we decided to upgrade all the contracts so that we could do more flexible things with them and with Numerair. And all that upgrade, all those upgraded smart contracts, we call the Erasure Protocol. And the reason it's called the protocol is because actually even other developers could develop on it, or you could build applications that aren't really about stock market predictions, but about something else. And so we made an application called Erasure Bay, which is almost like just a Twitter bot. It was kind of an experiment where it's just like, well, what if you could stake on things that weren't to do with the stock market? And people have staked all kinds of things. Like someone posted a submission that said, I'll stake 50, I'll give you $50. It's almost like a bounty. I'll give you $50 if you give me Kylie Jenner's phone number. And then someone gave the phone number. And put up a little stake and gave the phone number, and then that stake didn't get burned. So maybe it was the real phone number. Wow. But yeah, you can do these kind of funny things with the Razorpay, and funny things with staking that you couldn't do with normal internet, where you have nothing at stake and you have nothing to lose by being a bad actor.
Right.
So it's just very interesting to me, the idea of staking and the idea of possible new companies that could have staking mechanics to make their whole system work, because Numerai really would not work without staking.
Right. And there's a few questions there. Obviously, ETH2 is in the process. They're moving from proof of work to proof of stake. So very symbiotic with what you're talking about. But also, I want to kind of dig a little deeper into prediction and these ideas of predictive markets. You know, back in the day, we saw Augur be one of the first out there. But Numerai has also been in that world too, as you alluded to with Erasure, Razorpay. We saw a new startup, come out right before the U.S. elections, and people were, doing predictive kind of staking on whether Biden or Trump would win. And some of the very interesting kind of analysis and charting mechanisms started to pop up there, which could have applicative value to investors around the world. I'm curious, as we go into 2021, 2022, this idea of predictive markets is fascinating to me. But again, it's usually reliant on the inputs and how good those inputs are. And and I know, that there are at times biases with those inputs. So I'm curious, the future of predictive markets, what do you think it is for the next few years with some of those thoughts in mind?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. There's definitely something about predictive markets that are somehow, exactly what crypto is for, right? Like Augur was one of the first examples of a kind of application on Ethereum that would be something quite different to, what you would expect you could achieve with a blockchain by solving the Oracle problem. But now there's many other things like it. Anything to do with DeFi is also like you put up collateral like as a sort of a stake, and then you can get access to some other asset. So there's so much you can do with these small primitives like staking. But setting that aside about blockchain, I mean, when you're predicting the future based on past data, you have to have that some of the past happens again in the future or something like that. Like the domain matches the out of sample data. Mm-hmm. And that's the big challenge with stock market predictions. Like usually back tests go up and so you get very excited and you think it's going to be good and then it doesn't work in live. Mm-hmm. And the way that Numerai solved this problem is, number one, never really using backtests. The whole thing is like a machine learning problem and never giving out, doing the whole thing in an abstract machine learning type of way. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing is doing it with lots and lots of models, trying different things with each of the models having some skin in the game. Mm-hmm. And if you do that every single week, Numerai gets a bit better, right? Like someone improves their model and now overall the model's way better. So even if 50 of our models fail really badly, there's another few hundred that can do really well.
Right.
And that idea of ensembling, putting lots of different models together is the key idea. And Numerai is doing it in this distributed way so we can always have way more than any other hedge fund.
And so thinking as we get to the top of the show for the next year, obviously 2020 was a breakout year for DeFi. And in many cases, Numerai could be kind of put into one of those key pieces of this going forward. But into 2021, 2022, what should people be on the lookout? Obviously, you had a big year with Signals. Obviously, Razorpay has been out. What are some of the things that we should be on the lookout for going into 2021 as you guys continue to tinker and make things better and bring new kind of components to the market?
Yeah, well, I'm amazed at our growth. I mean, for the first 2 years of Numerai offering staking of NMR, it was pretty much about $30,000 of stakes as soon as maybe as recently as like 14 months ago or something like that. And it's now gone from 30,000, which was like flat and not really growing, to $5 million. And if we do that kind, that's a lot of growth. Okay. That's much more than, you know, double. it's really crazy. And there's no reason for that except for, just everything in the space getting better and a bit easier. Like a year ago, it wasn't possible to buy NMR on Coinbase. Now it is. So now it's much easier for our data scientists to buy and sell it and then stake it. So there's this huge growth, and like I actually think it's going to keep going. Like we don't see that going away. Like what if there's $100 million of NMR at stake on Numerai a year from now? So it goes from 30,000 to 5 million, 5 million to 100 million. Like that doesn't seem impossible. And that's very exciting because ultimately crypto is only exciting because people use it. And if you have a bunch of people holding Bitcoin and Bitcoin's going up, okay, yeah, that's one story and that's quite cool. Mm-hmm. But the idea that some of these new applications and new ways of using cryptocurrency could be right at the early stages, and 2021 could be the year where they all get used for their real purpose, not just for speculation. I really like that.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a really important point because this is why we, you know, my firm, obviously, which is not necessarily associated with the podcast, but my firm, you know, we firmly believe that we actually call these digital assets because Bitcoin, for all intents and purposes, is the cryptocurrency out there. It's the programmable money. But at the end of the day, a lot of these function as building and supporting and being the foundation of networks that are distributed and decentralized that are actually building or are the purpose or the building blocks of applications that are meant to be used like Numerai. And so, you know, that is why we call it that, because those are, you know, as Richard alluded to, there's a function here. There's, you know, there is utilization here. And so really interesting to have you on, Richard. Appreciate you coming on the show. You know, Numerai, as I said again, is one of those projects that has caught the attention of many sophisticated investors because what you're looking to do and what you have been doing is revolutionary. And so thank you for coming on. Hopefully we can have you on again in 2021. And if you're going to be surfing again, I'll just make note because I won't record with you. we'll just let you have your surfing time and I won't be jealous. But stay well. Thank you for coming on and we'll have you on again soon.
Okay. Thank you. It was awesome.
Thanks for listening in to BaseLayer. If you like the show and all the different guests that we've brought on, please give a like and subscribe on Apple or Spotify or wherever you do listen to the podcast. Also, if you want to have a conversation or reach out to me, you can reach me out on Twitter at David J. Nage, and let's talk there. Or also you can find me on LinkedIn, and I look forward to having great conversations with you all about digital assets. This podcast is presented by Blockworks Group, one of the best digital asset event and media production companies that I know of. For exclusive content and events that provide insight into digital assets, visit them at blockworksgroup.io. You won't be disappointed.